All right. Let's get fired up here.
Maximum freedom. Read.
Stay on target.
Maximum
freedom. Stay on target.
Maximum freedom. Read Rothbard.
Hello and welcome to episode 11 of the Read Rothbard podcast. We're back at it again, not knowing what we're going to talk about. How you doing, Mr. Robert Johnson?
I'm eating mango, so I'm happy.
That sounds like a good thing to have. So
I highly recommend it.
So we've made 10 shows in the past, and I think that we were moving towards a very each one getting more controversial than the previous one, and then we went a little bit lighthearted with the last two episodes, which were more nerd based.
Yeah, not surprisingly, those are my two most favorite episodes. Those are the ones where I had the most fun. I mean, the darker ones where we're talking about real shit. Yeah, they're fine and good, and I think they're important, but they're pretty heavy. So, I mean, I don't really relish doing that stuff. You know, I'd prefer to think of the world as this happy, fun place, not as this horrific nightmare. So, you know.
No, I think that's a good sentiment, and I've been having thoughts of my own recently, in addition to listening to some of the Tom Woods podcasts that I was sending your way earlier today. That maybe there's a different tact that we can sort of look at in our approach to things. And, you know, one of those things was like simplifying the message, and we've been going back and forth on that a little bit. I'm just going to pull up our discussions over the last couple of days in our little Google chat here and see if I wrote anything of interest. But why don't we start there and then see where this takes us?
Whatever, man.
All right, and one other thing I wanted to mention is that I have been putting Amazon links back up on the site. We had the previous ones go dark because I had incorrectly input some website information in the application process, and so they shut that down, so I had to restart it. So you'll start seeing new and different-looking Amazon links on the website. If you do want to support us, go ahead and click on one of those to start your Amazon shopping experience, and then we will, at no cost to you, receive a small commission.
Just for driving traffic.
Just for driving the traffic, that's right. Another thing I've been working on, and this is sort of in the test phase right now, but we do have a whole bunch of Murray Rothbard lectures on readrothbard.com, as you know, Robert. And I have been toying with the idea of getting them transcribed. And it's a fair amount of work, even just formatting all of this information into a digestible format onto the website. But if that is something that is of interest to you folks, feel free to come by and check it out. There was a recent discovery I made of a brief 15-minute discussion on libertarianism by Murray that was recorded in 1978 in Hong Kong, and that has a free version of the transcript, so you can kind of see what it'll look like. And then if you want to become a premium member on the site, you'll have access to the additional transcripts that are already in place, and I'm toying with the idea of each premium member will get to request any lecture that is not already created as a transcript to be completed as one. And that'll be kind of on an as requested basis.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, that way I don't have to drop several thousand dollars doing them all at once without any order or any preference as determined by our audience, our customers.
The market.
The market. Okay, so as I've been discussing, I'm going through our previous discussions, and we talked a lot about that Rolling Stone article that just made both of us cringe. I don't know if we need to go over that.
Yeah, so good.
Yeah, it's so terrible. and I'm going to have to cut out some of this here.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about New York. I forget what article I was looking at. It might have been the Rolling Stone one, but there was an advertisement. And I don't really consider myself a conservative, but it was an advertisement for like the New York Post. And they were saying, guess which one of these SNL alumni are secret conservatives? As if it's like a secret or some sort of a scandal because, you know, you're not like one of us. It's what is it? What is this? The idea that conservatism is, and I guess I was once in this fold. The idea that conservatism is like this kind of backwards thinking, and I would argue that anything that involves government is. So in that sense, they're not far off. But at least conservatism, you could argue, is traditionally the idea of having less government, smaller government, even though, I mean, how successful have they been? Zero, not. Government has only grown since it was ever founded. So, as an ideology, it fails. It's not necessarily its fault. I mean, you're talking about the idea that, and I don't know if I'm making any sense here, but you can always cut this out. The idea that you can be constrained by a piece of paper, such as the Constitution or what have you, or that it stops anybody from doing anything, is, in hindsight, kind of a joke. The idea is that they swear to uphold this document when they take office, but then they immediately go about undermining it and bypassing it and ignoring it. So what good did it do? And you can feel free to jump in any time if you have any ideas or any thoughts. If you want to take this discussion into a different direction, because I don't know what I'm doing here.
No, this is okay. This is certainly a potpourri today. I have heard mention of conservatives being sort of blacklisted in media and Hollywood. Like, they're sort of shamed, and so they're not openly conservative. They're not open about it in many circles. I think Ben Shapiro talks about that in one of his books called Bullies, which I'll put a link down below, but basically says that there is definitely a bias in who gets hired to write for shows, to star in shows, to be part of the media apparatus, entertainment complex. And if you express conservative views, then you you don't get as many opportunities. And they're somewhat open about it, though when you question them directly, they deny it. But I think Ben cites an example of The Daily Show, Jon Stewart, where a conservative person was invited on before it was known they were conservative, and then the invitation was withdrawn or something along those lines. I don't have the details in front of me, but I can try to find them. But it does sound like there is a club of left-leaning liberal types who want to just create this echo chamber and maintain it without any dissenting views. And, of course, you know, you and I wouldn't even agree on the conservative side. I mean, we're for maximum freedom. And so we don't really fit on this spectrum of the left and right paradigm. But I do think that there is a disparity in what is culturally represented in the media.
Now, I don't want to get in. I want to make the distinction that I am not claiming, like, this is discrimination and that's terrible or anything like that. This is all completely voluntary, and I'm perfectly fine with it. If someone wants to have a club and they only want people that are of a certain mindset in that club, that's fine. Go for it. Live your life, man. I don't want to sit here and complain and whine about, like, people's preferences and say that, you know, well, I don't want to hire this conservative, and saying somehow there needs to be equal representation. That's not what I'm saying at all. That gets into the whole talk about discrimination and equal rights and that sort of crap. And maybe we could steer the discussion into that range. Like, not too long ago, there was a, for the longest time, the Masters has been a male-only golf club. Just hey, we got a golf club, all dudes. No women are invited. But there was, like, a female golfer. Might have been, like, Condoleezza Rice, or I think she was part of that, or maybe I'm confusing something. But I made a big stink about it. Hey, why aren't I allowed in this club? I want to be in this club. You got to let me in. And I'm pretty sure they enforced the, they called on big government to basically let this boys club, or force this boys club to accept a female member. And I'm like, hey, man, freedom of association. If I don't want to hang out with a woman right now in my club, I don't have to. This is a private club, and you can do that. If I wanted to have a club that was only members of people named Robert, it was just called the Robert Club, and only Roberts came in, I can do that. And I can discriminate and say no, no Howards, no Steves, no Bills, none of that. And that's perfectly fine. That's completely moral and ethical. You're limiting yourself to the number of members, and that's what you want to do. It's an exclusive thing. There's nothing wrong with that. I don't know if I had a huge point, but that was my point.
Yeah, I think that is a good point. I mean, if you were running a basketball team, you would discriminate against anyone who had no skills at basketball. You would discriminate against shorter people, most likely, unless they were like Steve Nash level talent. Discrimination in determining who is your best, talent pool for things is kind of a shortcut way to eliminate, the 10,000 possibilities and get down to the 5 or 10 that you can actually vet.
Yeah, to borrow a Walt Williams argument, people that complain about discrimination, do you give equal opportunity to everyone in the world before you chose your spouse? Did you discriminate based on attractiveness? Did you discriminate on personality, on compatibility? Did you discriminate on locality, age, ability to have children, desire to have children? I mean, there are a million things that people discriminate against all the time. So to complain about other people's choices and other people's preferences is really disingenuous.
Yeah, because everyone has preferences and they display them all the time. And in fact, they try to impose them on others through the political process. And so to claim that having preferences and being selective or discriminating in anything is not only disingenuous, but it's kind of a fraudulent representation of their ideology.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah,
and we talked about in the past when the University of Washington got in trouble for their cheerleader poster. Remember that?
Indeed.
Yeah, so the UW and Wazoo, that is the Western, or I'm sorry, what is Wazoo? Eastern Washington? No, it's Washington State, sorry. It's a couple miles from here, and I don't even know what I'm talking about. Washington State University.
Yeah, I'll cut that out. Just give it a few seconds and just start off with Washington State University. I'll pick it up right there.
That's fine. My flubs are fine. I don't care. Yeah, Washington State University. They put out posters listing pictures of, like, representation of a potential candidate, of a potential cheerleader or a current cheerleader, whatever. And then they listed a bunch of preferences for tryouts, saying, hey, if you want to try out to be a cheerleader, this is what we're looking for. You know, wear your hair in this certain fashion, don't have any exposed tattoos, blah, 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 all kinds of different qualifications. And there was a huge backlash and media uproar, especially on social media, saying, like, how dare you? This isn't promoting equality. This is discriminatory. How dare you? How do the people that don't meet these qualifications feel? Well, excuse them for having preferences, for having a job opening, and then having a list of qualifications for that job. I don't qualify to be an NBA center. Should I file a petition? Should I complain about it on social media? Should I go to the government to force the NBA to start looking at little white guys as centers or whatever? It's complaining about other people's preferences while having preferences of your own. So annoying.
Yeah, and they're demanding that their preferences be adhered to, and not only in the negative sense, you know, like their preference to be left alone, like our preference would be, but their preference to get things from others, like as if they are rights, positive rights.
Right. Yeah, like you, I don't like what you did, therefore you must change it. So you must do that for me. What?
Yeah, or I need this thing and I don't want to pay for it. So you need to legislate that it's required by the employer to provide it or pay for it, you know, insurance-wise or whatever.
Right.
And
that happens all the time.
Yeah, I want to loop it back to the conservative versus liberal idea in the media. And your point was a good one in that they should be free to do that, and I agree. There shouldn't be any restrictions on anything that you can do so long as you're not initiating violence or using force or fraud. But I think that the narrative that they present is that they are being unbiased and they are giving you, you know, multiple sides of everything, and that they're not selectively excluding people and opinions and ideas in the so-called marketplace of ideas. They're hiding behind that. They're claiming that they are this marketplace for ideas, but they're actively shutting down dissent in the media and, like, even in Facebook posts. I don't know if I sent you this the other day, but apparently some libertarian memes that are related to Hillary Clinton, which are basically taking memes that were from the new side of liberal, you know, the leftist side, and doing a libertarian version of it. So basically the same thing, just tweaking the message a bit, and the libertarian site got shut down. And I guess that has been investigated recently related to whether Facebook moderators are suppressing content that is conservative or libertarian in nature, and yet they're letting all of this liberal stuff that's calling for, like, assassinating Donald Trump or killing cops, you know, supporting Black Lives Matter, they're allowing that to go on. So it's hypocrisy. I mean, granted, it is their playground, right? But they're pretending as if they're being judicious and fair about it to everybody.
Right. So on the one hand, yes, it is their platform, and they can do what they want. It's a private company, and they can edit content or whatever. I don't know what the actual user agreements are when you sign up for a Facebook account. I don't know if I've ever done that or read it. I don't know if they're in violation of any of those agreements, any of those contracts. But it is disingenuous if you claim to be neutral while targeting particular speech that you don't happen to agree with.
It reminds me of the IRS being used to harass libertarian and conservative groups. It's probably, what, 6 or 8 years ago now? But basically, it came out that those groups were getting audited far more often than corresponding liberal groups. And it became this pseudo-scandal, you know, not big enough to actually change anything. Maybe on the surface, like, a couple of guys got fired. But that's pretty much it. I did want to mention, since we were talking about the marketplace of ideas, and I had made a comment to you in our discussion online, and it goes along like this. So if there is a marketplace of ideas, hold on, let me find it here.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought it was good. I thought it was good, and now I can't find it. Some bitch.
This is good content.
That's right, folks. Enjoy this. Okay, I told you you were going to a re-education camp in New York.
Finally.
Yeah.
Well, at least you'll get to be editing a lot.
No, I found it. I found it. Okay. So, if there is such a thing as a marketplace of ideas.
Now, then, are you disputing that the marketplace of ideas exists?
Well, people claim that that's what the political process is.
They do?
Yes. I've had discussions with statists about this, where they say if you want to change things, then you throw your ideas out there and you see what support you can get and what initiatives and what candidates you can get in positions of power to get those ideas into place. They view the political process as a means by which the best ideas rise to the top and thus govern us.
They can't possibly say that.
They do say that. That's their argument.
That can't possibly be true. When I ever thought of the marketplace of ideas, I thought of just in general, and this is a very general concept, I suppose, just that the common beliefs of the general population in any geographic area, in the way in that Chinese people tend to be more collectivist and Americans tend to be more individualistic, that sort of thing, and ideas surrounding those general ideologies.
I think there's maybe a different name for that.
Well, that's fine. But, like, for example, you know, the idea that the Earth is round or that the Earth travels around the sun instead of the other way around, I would say that that is an idea that has won in the marketplace of ideas. You're saying that it's the marketplace of ideas is the political process? That can't possibly be true. The political process is founded on violence and the initiation of force. That, and there is no ideas associated with it.
Well, I'll represent it as a misunderstanding of a statist in calling the political process a marketplace of ideas, saying that if you have an idea, then you put it out there and you get support for it. You create a group, you advocate, you get initiatives and ballot measures and candidates.
And you finally attack people?
Right. And it's a misunderstanding, right, of what a marketplace of ideas is. So in using their definition of it, which we've already identified as being immoral, as it is.
Misappropriating some sort of a word, a term. Maybe they have the original way of using that term. I don't know. But I think that's laughable that, I mean, it's very simple-minded and idealistic, I suppose. Very kind of naive, I want to say.
It's probably, yeah. Just,
yeah, like, oh, I just have a really good idea, and, man, everybody else is going to just take it and run with it, and it's going to change the world. It's going to be fantastic.
Well, only the cream rises, right?
And then it's all going to be just sunshine and rainbows, when it gets implemented by the government.
Yeah. So leaving aside that it's immoral, I was trying to get to a point.
And I interrupted you. That's fine.
I know that's hard for me to get to a point. But using this definition of a marketplace of ideas, so not the scientific progress one, but the exchange of ideas in a political realm. Because that's kind of where the starting point is for most of the people that we would come in contact with, right? Like, they're going to be thinking in those terms.
Yes, the average statist thinks that government is the way things get accomplished, yes.
Right. And so I would say to them, to simplify the point, like, if there is such a thing as a marketplace of ideas in the political process, then an important distinction to be made is that their ideas result in things being violently taken from others to be given to yet themselves or other people.
No matter how good their idea supposedly is or whatever, regardless of what the idea is.
Right. And in contrast, our ideas is simply the negation of that. We're simply saying it will result in you not getting stuff from other people through a violent and coercive process.
And your own things will also not be taken from you.
Right, yeah. Don't take from me. I won't take from you. If you wish to voluntarily exchange with me, I will do that if it benefits me. If I think it will benefit me, I will do that.
Right.
And that's, you know, where exchange comes from, is that you and I value things differently. If I have something that you value more than I do and vice versa, I'll make that trade. If not, then I won't.
Yeah, buddy, or as you perceive it to be, as you hope to be. You could still be mistaken, sure, but you think it'll be improving your life, and I think it'll be improving my life, and I value those apples more than I value my dollar, and there we go.
Yeah, and I think that there's this misunderstanding again that things are exchanged because they're equal in value in some objective way, and that's clearly not the case. You know, value is a subjective thing. If things were equal, then why would you ever trade anything for anything else?
Right.
If it equally has the equal amount of utility to you, if you're not going to be better off by making the trade, why would you do it?
Right, because it takes time, energy, thought to make a trade. So there is an investment there. So why would you ever do it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, buddy.
So I think in that way, you know, we sort of simplify the message when you talk about your ideas versus our ideas. You, the statist, listener, you know, your ideas initiate violence. You implementing anything, creating a law, as we've discussed in our previous episodes, when it boils down to it, if somebody doesn't comply with that rule, that law, then force will be used against them. And if they resist that, then that force becomes lethal. And this isn't some fantastical, you know, drawn-out thing. This is, you know, if you refuse to comply, as we've seen across the country with all these police shootings, if you refuse to comply with an officer, who knows what they're going to do to you?
Right. You are at their mercy. Regardless of whether they kill you or not, you are absolutely at their mercy. You've got a guy with his knee in your back, and usually a gun drawn at you for some also unknown reason. And whether he pulls the trigger or not, you don't know.
Yeah, officer safety, I think, is the argument.
Because officers' lives are worth more than other people's.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah, I've been working on a diatribe, I guess you could call it, against police. It's really just, I'm thinking about posting it as like just angry old man. I get really, really frustrated and angry because I see all these posts and memes and comments, and especially in comment sessions on these mainstream articles, saying how, you know, these people are heroes and we just love them and if there's anything I could do for them. That's why I was so excited when I saw this Taco Bell lady who was like, no, get out of here. We don't serve your kind. That was great. Hey, that's a voluntary thing. I don't want to hang out with you. I don't want to serve you. Please leave. And then there's, of course, this massive backlash. Oh, how dare you, Taco Bell person, treat me like a second-class citizen. Don't you know who I am? I'm a cop. I'm a god creature. And then all these people coming out saying all these people are heroes. I'm never going to eat a Taco Bell again, which is fine. Hey, if someone's doing something you don't like doing, don't patronize them. Don't service them. Don't use their place of business. Don't support them. That's fine. I wish more people did that. That would be fantastic. Instead of calling down the government to institute some sort of a law to force people to do what they don't want to do.
Yeah, I've always wondered how I would react if I were to start, you know, like a restaurant or a business that would be either patronized by government employees or police officers, like a donut shop, or bidding on, say, government contracts for things. And, you know, my personal ideology, which I hold as a core principle these days, you know, until it was developed, you know, I don't think most people have one, But now that I have one that's developed, I think I would have a very difficult time serving people that are, you know, tools of this Leviathan apparatus that is bent on, you know, compliance and using force and coercion to accomplish its goals.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But you can't say that in polite company. You know, you socially, you would be attacked for saying things like that. Yeah, like this Taco Bell employee.
Yeah, Taco Bell employee, and by proxy, Taco Bell Incorporated. And like even the Cedro Woolley teriyaki place. And they came out and said later it was a big misunderstanding. But even the other Lucky Teriyaki places around the Pacific Northwest that aren't even affiliated with Lucky Teriyaki in Cedro Woolley got a bunch of threats and a bunch of negative calls and that sort of thing, saying, how dare you, you got to service these heroes, blah, blah, blah. And that wasn't even, and then they faced, you know, that real backlash, and I don't know if they were just kind of backpedaling and saying, like, oh, I can't believe, you know, whatever. They came out and said it was a misunderstanding between, you know, the language barrier between the employee and the policeman.
You know, this is interesting. I want to explore this a little bit, because I think we would both argue that they're perfectly within their rights to deny the officers, just as people in social media are perfectly justified in expressing their opinion. You know, like they don't want to go there. They can talk shit about this place. I mean, isn't that the market in action? Like
that is, and that's what I mean when I say the marketplace of ideas. That is the market in action. Absolutely, that is the Yelp. That is, you look at a review for the Lucky Teriyaki place in Snohomish or Cedro Woolley, and it'll say, you know, we don't serve cops, but everybody else is welcome, or we don't serve government employees, everybody else is welcome. And there's a whole bunch of people that are all upset about that and don't think it's right or whatever. But then there's a whole bunch of other people, hopefully, probably not, probably the minority, who would go, oh, that's nice. I don't have to worry about any cops being around there when I go, and maybe I'll have a pleasant dining experience.
Right.
These people more aligned with my ideology.
But it does go to show, with them backpedaling, that they're caving to the social pressure, because there is a feedback mechanism, because their sales are going to be hurt by this. And if they can't maintain enough sales to remain profitable and keep the lights on, then they're going to need to shut down. So, like, this is a perfect example of them needing to cater to their customers. You know, their customers, their audience, thought that they stepped out of line. Now, their audience, in my opinion, is wrong, but they're justified in doing it. You know, they can have opinions and act on them so long as they're not initiating force against everyone, which sort of leads to that large argument of, you know, they're probably involved in the political process, and therefore they are, in fact, initiating violence against everybody. But let's leave that aside for now. Because they'll often, those same types of people, will say, well, without the government to enforce these laws and rules and regulations on business, then the businesses will run roughshod over the consumers and over their wage slave employees and, you know, yada, 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 on and on. But this very example where they are that corrective measure. They are that regulating force.
Yeah, so many statist arguments are, without government to protect us, corporations would just rule the world and run roughshod over everybody. And yeah, you're absolutely right. This and many other examples show the power that the consumer has to alert other people in the media or in the local area. Hey, look at what these people are doing. We don't like that. Let's stop using these people. And then just see how quickly you get what you want by essentially boycotting the place and alerting other people that, you know, you should boycott the place too and blah, blah, blah. It's the marketplace of ideas, the market, it's really powerful, and it doesn't involve coercion or violence.
Yeah, I think Mises, in his treatise, Human Action, he writes about how to the naked eye, it appears that the owners and the businesses are the ones in control of the situation. But when you look beneath it, you understand that if those businesses and the leaders of those businesses don't meet the needs of those consumers, and there aren't government-enforced protections provided to that provider,
uh-huh.
Meta,
yeah, right.
Then you'll quickly see how the consumers are actually in charge, and they can change their minds on a whim.
Yeah, you know, and for any number of reasons.
Yeah, things go in and out of fashion, new technology comes into play, prices are constantly being pressured downward, new competitors are always you're at risk of them coming in with newer equipment and more efficient equipment than you've got. So you constantly have to reinvest in capital and research and development and maintaining your employees. And to maintain them, you know, you need to pay better than their alternatives if they were to go somewhere else. I mean, an employee that you've had for 5 or 10 years who knows how to do their job very well, that's very hard to replace, you know, if they were to walk out the door and you hire somebody new.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, so there's so many ways in which the market regulates, and this is what it means when you say the market regulates itself. And it's not the market in, like, some thing, some entity. It's a combination of all the consumers and all the producers in the world making exchanges. Like, every one of you is both a producer and a consumer.
Right. And the power you have, especially today, or even in the past, but especially today with social media, of getting your thoughts out and establishing some kind of a changing public opinion of something you dislike or something you like. It's massive. You have massive control over what you consume and what you get. You just, a lot of times, you don't use it. So you're using it all the time, but you're not conscious of the fact all the time. You go and you pick out the products you like and whatnot, and you shop at this place or that place. You're not necessarily conscious of how you are voting every time you make a purchase for more of the thing you just bought. But you are, and you're doing it voluntarily. And there was no government law that decreed that that thing had to be there for you to purchase, for that service to be available. That was a free market entrepreneur that was looking to meet a need. And you decided that that person successfully met that need that you have for that thing. And there was no violence needed.
I will put one asterisk in there, and that is insurance that is mandated by government. But that's, you know, very few and far between as far as the whole plethora of goods and services available to every one of us in the marketplace.
You mean the mandating of insurance for, like, driving and that sort of thing? What are you talking about?
I mean driving and also now health insurance with the Obamacare.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I would say that our insurance is a way to mitigate risk, and that is the job of every living human that tries to be around for much longer, is to mitigate risk and for you to decide whether you want to purchase insurance or not. It's not for some government overlord to decree that everybody must have a thing. That's highly immoral. Highly immoral. You can decide for yourself. You're the best person to decide for yourself how to live your life.
I agree with you there. And perhaps the insurance thing is something we can discuss in a future podcast in a little bit more detail, because I would argue that health insurance is not insurance at all unless you're discussing catastrophic health insurance. Everything else is sort of like gas insurance or tire insurance or oil change insurance for your car. You know, maintenance things that aren't a risk that's trying to be avoided. It's more of a transfer scheme to get it paid for, diffuse the cost amongst the many. But we can get into that another time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sounds interesting.
I did want to bring up a comment that I made to you in our previous discussions. Let's see if it's still showing. Ah, yes. So a question I would ask these people in their ideas is, how much violence are they willing to have initiated to impose them?
Yeah, but you're running into the problem of, I mean, statists just don't see it as violence. I mean, I've had discussions with statists recently even where they just don't see it as violence. I mean, what are you even talking about? They see that, you know, police are people who keep the peace. As, you know, this is, that if we didn't have the police, you know, people would just be animals attacking each other all the time.
Well, you know what they say, that ignorance is no excuse of violating the law. So ignorance of the fact that it's violence is no excuse. It doesn't make it somehow moral, you know, just because they don't understand something. Similarly, if they, you know, when you have a discussion with them and you're saying, well, you know, we'd be much better off not having overlords and living in a libertarian libertopia, and they bring up some crap about roads, my response to them now is, well, your inability to see how roads would be created without initiating violence doesn't change the fact through some magic process that it's still violence that you're using to get that road made. And you're right, that connection needs to be made more clear. And I think we've drawn it out before in some of the previous discussions, and even on this one, where we say, you know, any regulation in law or law that's on the books must be enforced in some way. And if you refuse to comply with that law, then the increasing amounts of force will be used against you until you comply, or until you, I guess, can't resist, you know?
Yeah, and the how government gets off scot-free and government actors get off scot-free, where if I were to do it, if I were to tax my neighbor, it would be called extortion. But if government does it, it's called a tax. You know.
Yeah, and then they say, I'm just doing my job.
Yeah, exactly. Then they'll say, well, I'm just doing my job. And to borrow a line from Cool Hand Luke, just because it's called a job doesn't make it right. An assassin has a job to do. That doesn't make his job moral. Hey, but you brought up roads. Could you remind me, you sent me a post about the road, the city over in Eastern Europe where they had been talking about building a road. We need a road. We need a road in this neighborhood. We need a road. And the government was like, yeah, there's no money. There's no money. There's no money. And then they're like, well, screw it. Let's just build a road. All right, we'll take up a collection, build a road. Then the government comes in and says, yeah, this road doesn't meet our specifications. We're going to have to fine you. We might have to tear up this road.
Yeah, I've got it here. This will be posted down below. And this came to my attention from Anarchy Ball. They shared this. But it says, this article is from my native Lithuania. So I'll give you a short summary. A small district in the suburbs didn't have an asphalt road, just a shitty dirt road, which they requested from government for 14 years to get, you know, to get fixed and have asphalt put down. And the reply was, there's no money. So the neighbors got together in that district and put enough money together and hired a company to make a road, an asphalt road, which was then built. And now the government is saying that they have violated by building without a permit and that they will be fined. And if the commission, that the city government can somehow get the money together to assemble, they will decide that the road doesn't meet their standards. And, you know, apparently the dirt road met the standards, but the asphalt road doesn't. And then the asphalt will be torn up, and the citizens will be charged for that.
So it sounds like a money-making scheme from the government. So we'll charge them for everything we have to do. It's like you can't win with these assholes, these control freaks who, if you're just trying to live, they even gave them perfect every opportunity to meet the needs. If you're one of these people that says, well, government is there to serve the people. They're like a service that we buy with our tax dollars. They gave them 14 years worth of opportunity to service this need. And in the end, they're like, screw it. We're going to do it ourselves. And then government comes in and gets all uppy about it. Oh, you went over our helmet? Oh, no, you don't. We're going to come in and say, oh, well, you know, what you did was wrong. How dare you go over our helmet and punch him in the balls. Good time.
Yeah, it's total bullshit.
How can you defend that as a statist? I don't even understand. How could you look at that and go, oh, that's reasonable?
They probably bring up some tripe about, well, how do we know that that road is safe or some bullshit?
As opposed to the dirt road? And first of all, that's the risk of the... Well, first of all, they used a normal like road builder company, which is what everybody uses, the same road builder companies that everybody uses.
Yeah, that's the answer to who will build the roads. The fucking road company will build the roads.
Yeah, yeah, that's what they do.
It's just who's going to pay for it, that's all.
Mm-hmm. I guarantee you, a road building company would find a way to sell their labor in a free society.
Yep, and they would be competing
with
each other.
It's the height of arrogance. Yeah, they'd be competing against each other. They wouldn't get these no-bid fucking government contracts. Saying that they wouldn't find a way to sell their labor when they have a product to sell and a skill is the height of arrogance. So.
Yeah. So, Robert, what is the answer to this? Is it? I'm queuing it up. Is it this?
Maximum freedom.
It's always that.
It is always that.
It's always the answer, man.
You know, in a related post... I saw that there is a thing called a road printer.
A 3D printer?
It's like a 30-foot wide contraption that you throw in a bunch of raw ingredients, and out the back end of this thing comes a fully pressed and completed road.
Wow.
Which, I don't know if it's a legit thing, but it sounds like something that is in the realm of possibility and, you know, something that the market would provide if it were so deemed necessary by somebody.
Unless some government regulation came in and stopped it.
Right, right. And, you know, if it does exist, and I'll try to research this a little bit, I'm sure it came about because of some union legislation or some other bullshit that made hiring road workers, like, too expensive. So they went ahead and automated it, sort of like all these restaurants that are dealing with, like, the higher minimum wage in California and Seattle. are now laying off employees or reducing the number of hours so they don't like hit some arbitrary number of hours in which they need to pay their employees a certain amount. Or they're installing like robotic kiosks or food preparation machines. Like there's kiosks where you can get hamburgers made and burritos made nowadays. And sure, these things might come along eventually anyway, sort of like we've talked about the self-driving cars, and you know they'll eventually come around anyway. But their development is accelerated when their alternatives that they will eventually replace become so much more costly.
Right. You know, it accelerates the price point at which it makes sense to change over.
Right. And you could argue that in a way that's a misallocation, because an unfettered market probably wouldn't have devoted those resources in that arena, because hiring the normal workers would have been a more efficient use of those funds.
Right.
So, what is that taking away from? Because now all this money and effort has been devoted into this arena, into this one area, in response to some meddling by government. So, what other innovations are we missing out on so that we can get a fucking robo burrito?
Yeah, and those are hidden things. I mean, we'll never know, right? We don't know the innovations that don't happen because of government meddling. I mean, environmentalists and other people like to point to all the money that goes to, like, Elon Musk and, green energy. Just pump money into that crap. And I'm not saying it's not great, but it doesn't make economic sense right now. Maybe someday it would, but it's a misallocation of funds to just throw money at a thing in the hopes that someday it'll become economically viable. So, and it screws up with current markets. It totally messes things up. You, like when you go and you subsidize the corn markets, you end up paying farmers to not grow anything. So it's a waste of resources. It ends up becoming a giant waste of resources, and I'm sure you could talk a little bit better about it than I can. But it messes with the markets in unseen ways, and it's rarely ever blamed on government, except in like libertarian and anarchist circles. In some economic circles, but
yeah, still very small circles.
Very small circles is it ever blamed on government regulation and meddling?
Yeah, no, I think that's a pretty good point, and perhaps that's also another thing that we can bring up in a future episode. I know that there's a really good Murray clip where he talks about the price supports for the agriculture and how the price rise that was attributed to the First World War, where Europe was fighting each other, so their crops were destroyed, not planted, non-existent, and therefore the demand for American-produced goods skyrocketed. And then, after the war, then they start regrowing crops and everything, and then the price of American crops drops because now the supply has increased. And then they go whining to government, oh, no, it was normal times during the war, and we need it back to that. So
we need it back to those sweet times when we were selling our bushels for premium prices, right?
Yeah, so that should be something that we talk about in a future episode. I feel like I have so much content that it just is a matter of getting it sorted, identified, cataloged, and then called up in the appropriate time, and it's just there's just so much, it's overwhelming. And we're just two people here, folks, just two of us, and we're not even together. We're apart, hours and hours apart.
I think we might be able to maybe focus on a topic and an issue, but it seems like we just naturally have this kind of shotgun approach to this, where we just kind of smatter bits and pieces here and there. I don't know if that's just our normal way of talking, but I don't know how it is to listen to. I mean, to someone who's not versed in what we're actually talking about.
Yeah, I don't know. When I listen to our conversations, when I'm editing, it just sounds like we're just talking to each other on the phone, and in a way it's sort of like I'm talking to you again, which is a little bit weird.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if there's maybe a natural curiosity, if there is a listener out there, to just listen to, like we've said before, two guys talking, so it's like you're listening in on our conversation. Like, this is literally pretty much what we do when we talk to each other. And we throw a little bit of, reference to you, audience member, and at the beginning I throw a little bit of a, hey, welcome to the show, and try to throw a little marketing shit in there too, but I mean, this is pretty much what we do when we talk, right?
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to encapsulate with the show is just, hey, we have what I think are interesting conversations. So at least they're interesting to me, and if anybody else is interested to listen to these, that'd be cool. But I wanted to definitely to capture a conversation where, even though, we never really, I don't know if we come up with a lot of solutions, but I think we make a lot of good arguments, and they're not necessarily our own arguments. Maybe we have one or two of our own, but they're mostly established literature. that exist, like on readrothbard.com and Mises.org.
Nice plug.
Thanks, buddy. You know, the stuff is out there. I think we're just kind of like, we're packaging it a little bit in kind of a shotgunning way and in a conversationally way. So in that sense, I think that there's some value here, but I don't know. What does the market think?
Yeah, well, so far the market hasn't given too much of an opinion, but I think we can keep this up a little bit longer and until it lets us know which direction to go. I have thought that our discussions are a little bit on the sort of advanced side of things. Like, you have to have a basic understanding of some of the concepts to kind of follow what we're talking about. I think that we do take some shortcuts, and we're a little bit loose in our language with each other. It's almost like you need to have a little bit of inside information to be able to follow exactly what we're talking about. But as you just said, you know, a lot of that information is available on the website. So if people are interested in this type of stuff, I think that that's one of the best ways to get people interested is to pique their interest and then provide them resources for their own, you know, journey of discovery. You know, like, I can't just throw Human Action or Man, Economy, and State in your lap and say, okay, read this 900-page book.
Right.
What it can say is, hey, here's some provocative arguments and thoughts and some things to consider, and here's where you know, contradict yourself, you know, statist, because you do. There's no way around it.
really is.
So, you know, if that type of examination interests you, then I've got some resources for you, you know, but I'm not going to shove them down your throat.
Right, and I have argued that I've taken somewhat of the defeatist stance, a little bit, and that I question exactly how much people care whether they're contradicting themselves or not, or whether they have the time. But for those inclined, yes, absolutely, 100% agree. Check it out. If this stuff piques your interest, man, go for it. Learn all you can, dig in, listen, fantastic. But, man, I'm a little bit skeptical about your average guy. You know, I mean, there are so many, and we've probably talked about this before with the whole INTJ thing. You got to kind of be a little bit aligned. You got to, like, think that there's something wrong. You got to be able to see something wrong first to really even be interested in this stuff, I think. I mean, it is human action. Economics is human action. This is all based off of economics. So in that sense, and people are generally interested in other people. But are they really super interested in finding contradictions in their own mind? I don't know. I think people are a little more pragmatic. You know, if a contradiction gets them what they want, they can live with it.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I think that you've got a good point. I mean, people are emotional animals when they're making their decisions, and then they'll seek the intellectual, you know, backing it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Afterwards, right.
I guess we better approach it from more of an emotional angle. And I think, you know, we do offer a unique entry point into Austrian economics and anarchist, libertarian, voluntarist philosophy, in that I think we're a bit more approachable and I don't want to say like hip, but like, you know, youngish people. I mean, we're not so young anymore, but, you know, we still like things that normal 20 and 30 and 40 year old people like. You know, we go to movies, we like comic books, we go to restaurants, we enjoy hanging out with our friends. You know, it's not that intellectual approach per se. You kind of follow what I'm trying to get at? Like, I'm trying to make it an inviting entry point.
I don't know how effective we are, but we are just two guys trying to figure it out. Hopefully we don't sound like a couple of college professors lecturing at people. We don't want to come off like that. I mean, we might at some point, especially when I go on some sort of a rant. But usually college professors don't drop as many F-bombs as I do when I'm angry. So maybe you can at least identify with me on an emotional level, regardless of what you think of what my ideas are. So maybe that. I don't know how approachable or entry level we sound, honestly. Hopefully, sort of. But hopefully there's a little more to us than just a couple of noobs talking.
Rants.
Like ranting.
Yeah, and you know, one of the other things we've done a fair amount of is we've brought in some movie references and pop culture type stuff, and I think that might be another avenue to explore further and maybe develop a bit more, because that gives a little bit of a, you know, maybe they've seen that movie before, but they haven't thought about this implication of this particular scene or something that we see in it, and so then they can go back and watch that film again and sort of like more fully develop the thought that we bring up.
Yeah, that reminds me of The Magnificent Seven. I don't know if we talked about that on the podcast, but that's a very, very anarchist scenario.
We have not. Let's do that now.
Okay. Well, I don't remember all the quotes, but there are some very good quotes. It's a very quotable movie. I can't remember them all. I can't even remember hardly any of them, but I remember the plot of the movie. The basic plot is it breaks down where you got a town that are a bunch of farmers, and you're in Mexico in like the 1800s, and you don't have a whole lot of government presence. So it's not like, I don't even know if there was a sheriff in town. I don't think there was. So these people are like twice a year, they have to deal with this roving band of marauders who come in and they basically steal, you know, all the food they could want, all the food they can carry. You know, they have their way with the women. They drink up and help themselves to whatever they can in this town. And that's sort of, they claim it's like, this is the price you're paying for our protection. So this is like the typical, like, apocalyptic status scenario where there's no like, rule of law, there's no police, so what would happen? And of course it's a movie, but follow me. So they're saying that, well, society would just break down and it would just be rule of whoever's the most ruthless and whatever, right? And the strong would prey on the weak, right? And just survival of the fittest and whatever. So what happens is these farmers, they go to a nearby city or, I don't know, it's a lot bigger than their little Pueblo town thing. And they don't have a whole lot of money. They have very little. They have like a pittance. They can offer like $20 or something when normal pay for what they're proposing is like in the hundreds, like $500, $600. And they find these gunmen, these essentially mercenaries, these guys that are just looking for a dollar to do a job to protect them, essentially be bodyguards against this roving band of mercenaries. And they find one guy, and he's like the best gunman, you know, of course, like a hero character. And he agrees to be work for them, and it's kind of his job to find all these other people to help him defend this town. And it was really the movie kind of plays along the lines of, you know, so you're saying that if you're screwed, if you're poor, well, there are charitable people out there. These people, the Magnificent Seven, they help because they think that it's right. They help because they think that what these marauders are doing is wrong. They're also paying, they're also getting a paycheck, but they're also getting a very, very small paycheck. It's not like you're just paying them $1 million and they're like, okay, I guess I'll do it. They're saying, okay, I'll accept way less under my normal fee to help you because I think I'm doing the right thing. So the Magnificent Seven, they go to the town, and it's a lot like Three Amigos. If you've ever seen Three Amigos and you haven't seen Magnificent Seven, it's very similar. They kind of go to the town, and they set up a defensive perimeter, and they kind of train the farmers to how to fight. And then there's a big battle at the end. And that's about the whole movie. The main thing that I'd like to point out, and I've been saying it the whole time, is this idea that the strong will just prey on the weak. And there's nothing anybody can do to stop it. And people won't care about their reputation or how they would be seen in the community. It'll just be some roving band of marauders, and they'll take whatever they want. Well, there's always going to be bad people in the world. There's always going to be people that are going to initiate violence against other people to get what they want. But there are plenty more of us that see that as abhorrent, who recoil at the initiation of force, which is why when we see cops, we see them as a threat because cops go around initiating force against people all the time. And we recoil at that. We find it abhorrent. Now, some people, I guess mostly statists, don't see it as violence or what have you, but it is. And there will be good people. There are good people. And it's all the more reason to make friends, treat people well, get to know your neighbors. And that's mostly what I have to say about it. Just the idea that it'll just be some sort of Mad Max scenario where just everybody's murdering and killing each other and nothing all the good people can do to stop it is just kind of ridiculous. I mean, we're talking about a movie here, but it's a very, I would say it's a very freedom-oriented movie. Thoughts, Daniel?
Are you talking about a newer version of this film or like an older version?
Well, the original movie was Seven Samurai by Akira Kurosawa, and that was like in the 50s or something. It's a black and white movie. It was remade as The Magnificent Seven, I want to say in the 60s. And then, you know, of course, The Three Amigos was in the 80s. But I'm talking about the original Magnificent Seven in the 60s.
Okay, so it hasn't been like redone even more recently. For some reason, I felt like it had, maybe like with Adam Sandler or something.
Oh, really? I know he made a cowboy movie recently. It was on Netflix, apparently. It's supposed to be super terrible. I have no idea.
Oh, that's probably what I'm thinking of. So not the same thing.
I think that movie features a horse or a donkey that gets diarrhea and shits all over somebody's face or something. I don't know.
That's a very libertarian-minded movie right there.
Yeah.
So my thoughts, because I haven't seen that movie in such a long time, this from the 60s version of it, but I think it's interesting to note that you were mentioning how people would go in and just take whatever they wanted and sort of maraud over this place and sort of like impose their will upon the people of this town. And that sort of is what government does today. So, you know, it's like a mafia scenario, you know. So I don't see how that's any different than having a government, really. I mean, there's so many strong parallels. And then they go and find a self-funded way of defending themselves. And you know, that funding doesn't need to necessarily be all in, you know, money terms, like you were saying. You know, they weren't able to pay the going rate, but people were charitable and wanted to help them, which is another issue we can discuss on a future podcast, is when the government tells everyone that they're taking care of everything for you, then, you know, not as many people donate their time or money towards charitable causes.
If the government had a stronger presence in that. I mean, I like your parallels that the marauders were equal to what the government does. I like that. That's absolutely true. If there was like a big, strong sheriff or whatever, and for whatever reason, yeah, maybe they would have said, well, you got sheriff, don't you? Why don't you just have him take care of it instead of that?
Yeah. Yeah. So I had another point, and now I've forgotten it. But I do like the idea of bringing up movies and some themes that are related and to expand upon ideas. I think that's a good way to go about it. But, you know, this has been a rambling show, but maybe we can start drawing this to a close. Do you have any Uber or Pokemon Go related news that we can throw in at the end here?
Just that people just are starting, shit's starting to go bad. I mean, the more popular it is, although I guess in Brazil they have like horrific regulations, and so they haven't gotten it down there yet. And I think in China also, but China and Brazil, they both have really strict laws about what can go into the marketplace. Like every app in China, every single app, can you imagine? Every single app needs to be approved by some government agency in China before it can put on market. And apparently, like the latest Ghostbusters movie couldn't be shown in China, so their money take is going to be a lot less because China has some law about depicting supernatural elements and how you're not allowed to do that. I mean, just the ridiculousness of government. It's hilarious sometimes.
So are the Chinese people on their like iPhone 7s or their knockoff equivalents playing like that Nokia Snake game, like in 2016? Is that what they're doing?
No, I think that, you know, the market is strong and they get their knockoffs. They can't get the official thing, so they can't get like the official Pokemon Go, but they can get an equivalent that looks almost identical, plays almost identical. And I'm not saying that they have it with the Pokemon Go, but with other apps in the past, that's what they've done. They can't get, you know, the official app past the sensors or whatever, but they can get some kind of regional equivalent made by a local company.
So there's like an underground black market in this stuff?
Exactly. And you know, the original companies will complain, saying, hey, you just copied our game, slapped a different name on it. And it's like, well, that's the only way they can get it to the people. So they claim plagiarism and that sort of thing. But, hey, the problem is in government. It's not in the market. But, yeah, in Pokemon Go news, two people fell off a cliff playing Pokemon Go. In Florida, two people got shot at by a homeowner who thought that he was being robbed. And they were just out in their car trying to catch Pokemon, and he overheard them saying that, hey, did you get anything? And the person was like, no, I didn't get it or whatever or something like that, and he misinterpreted, and so he shot at the car. Seemed a bit trigger-happy. Shooting at somebody just happens to be in the road. But that's something that happened. I don't know. It's all over the place. Even like mainstream news media are talking about it huge. Like even like, you know, like New York Times has somebody on staff that's playing Pokemon Go and writing stories about it. And the stock price is jumping huge. Nintendo stock price is just going crazy now. It's actually above Sony's. And in the past, Nintendo was, man, not doing well at all. Their latest console was not doing well. They have been kind of on a downward, seeing massively reduced market share. But now with this, huge resurgence. Other than that, I don't know how many legs it's going to have. There are people that are already trying to like sell their Pokemon Go apps on eBay, their accounts. Like, hey, I caught all these monsters. You want to buy it? I think most of the joy is collecting it yourself. I don't see anybody wanting to just buy an account. But yeah, it's an interesting phenomenon. I don't know if it's got legs. I don't know how much gameplay is there. But, you know, maybe this is just the first iteration of this type of thing, getting people out into the world and doing something, and then we'll see more copycat apps that will, you know, kind of refine the formula and create a more long-lasting interactive experience. But I thought it was interesting. I think you sent it to me. This has kind of revived the debate over net neutrality because Nokia, or not Nokia, who was it? Some carrier was offering free data for their Pokemon Go app. And people were saying, hey, can't do that. You got to treat all data as equal. You can't offer free data for this device and then not other device. Which just goes shows the ridiculousness of net neutrality.
Yeah, another thing that was sold on a innocuous name that sounds like a good thing, but is actually a horrific thing that expands government control over an entire industry.
Yeah, and creates a worse service for everybody. I mean, if I want to go into a contract with an ISP and pay a premium price to get really good service, why can't I do that? Why shouldn't I be able to? And why can't, you know, it's to be able to create fast and slow lanes? Why not? All you're doing is stifling innovation. Well, that's not the only thing you're doing.
Yeah, I've got the article. I pulled it up, so I'll put it at the bottom of this episode. But yeah, it's basically T-Mobile decided to offer 1 year's free data to go with the Pokemon Go, and unlimited. So you know, so long as your phone's battery would last, it'd be all right. And a lot of people were very happy with this. They, you know, realize that it's T-Mobile's just using it as a marketing scheme, but you know, they're still getting a lot more users out of it. But then these advocates for net neutrality started complaining about it. And unfortunately, they complained enough to where now T-Mobile's offering the opposite. Instead of charging extra for something that is technologically demanding on their end, they are charging less for something that might get them more customers. So, you know, it's kind of a screwed up thing where these new government rules are applauded, then ignored, and then criticized, and then demanded, and all by the same people.
Yeah.
It's just kind of a bizarre thing. So I'll include this down at the bottom. But yeah, that's some pretty crazy stuff. And I know so many people who just went with the idea, based on the name alone, that, you know, thought net neutrality meant good, you know, that the government's going to make it good for everybody, somehow make everybody get equally fast internet, when all that's going to do is take an existing structure and stifle its continued growth and improvement and throw a whole lot more traffic at it, which, you know, like the roads going in and out of Seattle or Los Angeles, fuck it up.
Yeah, and I know people don't like... People just have like a gut reaction to hate their ISP or hate a communications company. Like they hate Comcast. People just hate it because, you know, the customer service is terrible and whatnot. But people don't see all these freaking ridiculous regulations they could put on these companies, and they're just trying to provide a service. I mean, it's all voluntary, but people choose the violent arm of government as opposed to the free market choice of voluntary service all the time, and it's really frustrating.
You know, and there's actually a backstory to why Comcast has such terrible customer service. And that's because they have a government-protected monopoly in a certain area to provide that cable service. So you have very limited choice. And
so why
you have limited,
right?
Well, you have limited choice, you get very terrible service. You know, so that even though we're arguing, you know, they're a private company and they're actually providing value for you, they do have a protected interest there. So they're not actually doing the same level of work they would do for you were it be an open market.
Right. If they actually had to fight for your business, fight for your dollars, compete for your dollars, they would care a whole lot more about their customer service for you. But since you basically have no other choice, then what do they care? They got you.
Yeah, I mean, you can go to crappy DSL or crappier satellite internet. Those are your options.
Right. Right. So, yeah, because, yeah, doesn't federal law, like, limit the number of ISPs in a given area of a certain type?
Yeah, and there's actually a Rothbard bit on this as well, which I need to find and catalog and do all of that. I really wish I had, for every one of our episodes, the relevant clips from Murray. I mean, we did in the last episode, and I think that was really good.
We need interns. We need to get some interns in on this. Doing some research.
Yeah, exactly. Does anyone want to volunteer to identify and catalog a bunch of audio clips? Write to us.
Good real-world experience, maybe.
You know, I am learning a lot in doing this whole process of creating the site and curating the content and building this podcast with you. I think that... it's working out from a technological standpoint far better than I ever hoped, you know, and it has been a bit of a learning curve to get to the point where we are, but I think it's working pretty well.
Yeah, I think I like what we're doing. I don't know. We could probably always be doing it better, but yeah, it's been good.
Yeah. Well, let's wrap this one up. We just did our Pokemon Go, and we'll save Uber for that taxi episode that we teased you guys about at a later date, and we'll definitely have some Murray stuff from that because I know where to get that one. So we'll do the Uber show to end all Uber shows in a future podcast. And like I was saying earlier, the Amazon links, I'm almost done fixing all of those on the site. We're going to be advertising a few other things once we get approval from them. So look out for some new stuff coming your way as far as the advertising on our site. And the transcripts are getting loaded as we speak. So that might be something worth checking out. And if there is interest in getting any additional work done transcript-wise, inquire within, and I'll let you know about the premium membership sort of on the fly. I'll figure it out as we go, and we'll get that worked out.
Cool. And Daniel can unplug his microphone and plug it back in as we have reached the, I don't know, whatever it is, some sort of a time limit on that thing. I don't really have anything else. We can talk about future ideas. I really want to get into the whole Black Lives Matter, white privilege, Bizzo, and then really hopefully at some point start at the beginning and walk through the initial principles and break down why we believe what we believe.
So many directions.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's leave it there. You know, I will play a 30-second clip from Ben Shapiro on white privilege as a teaser for a white privilege episode, and then we can sign off. So let me play that now, and then we can say good night, folks.
White privilege is a way to silence anybody who is not of color. That's what white privilege is. It is just a leftist bullshit term that means shut up because you are not a member of a minority group, a privileged minority group in the leftist space. It's reverse racism of the highest order. You're basically saying to white people who aren't racist, and you can't find any proof of their racism, that they must be racist because they're white. That is called racism. If you are accusing somebody of something simply because of the color of their skin without any evidence, that's called racism, gang.
Boom.
You know what
all right, thanks,
guys. Ideas? You, America. Fuck.
Oh, boy. I'll throw that one in later.
All right.
All right. Well, hey, thank you guys very much for listening to us kind of ramble on. I know I appreciate it. And, Robert, sign us out.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for listening, everybody. Get in touch with us at on Facebook or at rerothbard.com. Any questions, email us. That'd be fantastic. We'd love to answer emails. And then maybe one day we'll get on social media or something and you can just tweet at us or something. Who knows? Other than that, live your life and live free and take care of yourself.
That's right. Peace out, everyone. And remember, we want
maximum freedom.
All right. Good night.
The chipmunks. C-H-I-P-M-U-N-K. We're the chipmunks. Guaranteed to brighten your day. Do, 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 do.